As bundled-up New Yorkers scrape the gritty, snow-clogged streets of an all-too-real winter urban landscape here in New York City, let's take you into a dream New York of a half-century ago.
People hardly know where to begin when they step into the world of the fair. It has something of everything, something for everyone. The international area is crowded with exhibits from many nations. The industrial area has its lure in the miracles of science and technology. Across the Bridge of Nations is the transportation area with Ford Motor Company's pavilion.
The New York World's Fair of 1964-65 claimed to be all about the future, a bright, positive future for the world.
We invite visitors from every state and land, solicit their friendship, and devoutly hope that in presenting here this Olympics of progress, we shall draw them closer together in our shrinking globe, and thus, in the end, promote peace.
But the fair, if anything, was the closing of a chapter, a signal of the decline and ultimate political end for Robert Moses, speaking there, who had shaped the city in his image for much of the 20th century, and that city was in a turmoil no shiny World's Fair could conceal.
We have had some troubles in New York City in recent days, and there has been sensationalized reports of crime in our city. It is a fact that some people, hearing that these reports of riots, have canceled many hotel reservations and plans to visit New York. And yet it is also a fact that to this date, there is a perfect record, as far as the Commissioner of Police knows. No single visitor to our city has been physically attacked or brutalized in any way.
New York Mayor Robert Wagner trying to downplay Harlem's 1964 riots, a hint of things to come. Joseph Torella is author of Tomorrowland, the 1964-65 World's Fair and the Transformation of America. He says the World's Fair represented both a future fantasy and a jaded symbol of the hard realities New York and America were about to experience.
It was a seminal event in the lives of millions of people. 51 million people went, especially for New Yorkers and people in the Northeast. I mean, everyone of a certain age knew about the fair and went to the fair. And for them, it marks their childhood in much the same way that if you were alive at the time, the Kennedy assassination, civil rights. It's a major event of the 60s. And for that generation, it was an opportunity to see what the future might look like, what the wider world looked like.
It was also an encounter with some extraordinary egos. I remember the Life magazine cover with Robert Moses on the cover,
yes,
looking at the scale model of the fair, and my father making some sort of disparaging remark about how this is Moses's fair. And in some ways, it was his fair, but events also overtook even his own conception of the fair.
Completely. And your father was 1,000% right. Moses really thought of it as his fair, and everyone else did. And his idea about it, you know, the peace through understanding, which was the theme of the fair, he inherited that, but he embraced it. He tried everything he could to kind of keep the times of what was happening outside of the fair gates outside the fair. But that was next to impossible. I mean, fairs by nature are political, even more so than the Olympics, because the president of the United States opened the fair. And when Lyndon Johnson came, and it's 5 months to the day that John Kennedy is assassinated, there's large wild civil rights protests at the fair because at the time, this is what was happening in America. And you couldn't shut it out, and Moses tried. So he was overtaken by the events of the time. The summer of 63, right before the fair opened, was a horrible one for civil rights. There was protests almost every single day of the summer in almost every borough. And tensions were really boiling over. So then to have this massive fair, which spent millions and millions of dollars, a huge public works program.
Lost money.
And that's kind of why he became a target. The whole plan was he wanted to remake Flushing Meadow Park. And he'd been wanting to do that since the 20s. And he thought the fair was his opportunity. And that never really happened.
And so the leftovers from the World's Fair in 64 have become the alien portal in Men in Black, right?
That's right.
The Unisphere is still there and in good condition.
Yeah.
But the steel companies that manufactured it probably aren't.
He actually wanted Walt Disney to create a kind of mini theme park. And then when the fair was over, it would continue. But New York City wasn't going to fund it.
You know, Disney, as a kind of a prophet of pop culture in America, had a role in the fair. Andy Warhol, yes, as another kind of prophet of pop culture, had a role in the fair. And the music at the time, Bob Dylan and other pop musicians coming up in this, you know, I guess you can't really call rock and roll in 1964 an underground movement, but still it was controversial enough that that interaction was a rich brew.
Well, that was another thing that completely overtook Moses, was the whole Beatlemania. I mean, you have to think, Beatlemania is literally running wild. The Beatles get 73 million people to watch them on 1 hour of Ed Sullivan on a Sunday. Moses wanted 70 million people over the course of 2 years. He fell short by 20 million people. But in Moses, he couldn't bridge that gap. He was 75 years old when the fair opened. The Beatles was not his thing. He was into classical music. He was really into easy listening. He loved Guy Lombardo and the Royal Canadians. Nothing against them. But that was a house band at the World's Fair. And that was because Moses wanted it. And, you know, Tom McCann, the shoe company, wanted to sponsor the dance floor outside this band shell. And someone in the marketing team writes to Moses and says, you know, I don't think that Guy Lombardo, though they're very, you know, he's really good, I don't know that's really what's right in 1964 for the audience that we're looking for our customers and for your customers. And Moses just wouldn't have anything of it and basically just dismissed the guy. And then he's like, no, Guy Lombardo, he's very popular, even with some kids.
Boy, if it was done today, the shoe company would run the whole show.
It's true.
The book is called Tomorrowland, the 1964-65 World's Fair and the Transformation of America. And right on the front cover, you know, there's a picture of Dylan and Warhol and a very nice sort of stately picture of the fair with the Unisphere. But also Malcolm X.
Yes. So Malcolm X actually lived in Queens. But the reason he got in the book is he gives his famous Ballad of the Bullet speech. And for me, that speech just kind of summarized what was happening. And talk about predictions for the future. Malcolm was basically saying that if they don't pass the civil rights bill, and even if they do, what's going to happen is no one's going to understand just how nasty things are going to get. I mean, he says it obviously much more eloquent than that. But he predicted the race riots that would polarize the country over the next several years. And the very first summer of the fair, of course, was the Harlem riots of 1964, where a teenager on the Upper East Side was shot dead by a police officer under very dubious circumstances, and it touched off a tremendous riot. And about halfway through the first fair session, Moses was getting letters like, is it safe to come to New York? I'm from Alabama, and I hear that they're breaking windows for cars for Alabama, that New Yorkers were resentful of anyone from the South because of all the things going on, civil rights. And this woman was murdered. And apparently raped, and 38 people watched it. That would never happen in Texas, where the person was writing from. Can you guarantee my family's safety? So he was very concerned, because everything that was happening in New York and then the Harlem riots, people were staying away. I mean, I saw letters where people said, we were going to come, we had tickets, but we're going to do something a little safer. And that was a real concern. And this is really how the way he couldn't keep the events of the country out of the fair.
But of course, Moses is coming out of the golden age of New York, where everything's kind of Fifth Avenue and motorways and all of the sort of safety and kind of utopia, and entering a period of decline where Central Park was the equivalent of getting mugged after dark. You'd never go there. And today, New York is, in a sense, closer to that Moses vision. You got Times Square looking like a Disney park. You've got everybody coming here, you know, to eat Red Lobster. What would Moses think of the kind of theme park New York of today?
Oh, I don't think he'd have a problem with it. I think he'd probably still want to find an area where he can build an expressway through a part of it. I mean, Moses' shadow over New York is as large as the Manhattan skyline. There's no way to walk around the city and look at anything and not eventually find your way to him. I think he would be just fine with what New York was becoming. I'm sure he would probably have many opinions about how he could improve it.
And he wouldn't have gotten the joke of Men in Black.
No, I don't think he would. I don't think he would have seen that movie.
Joseph Turrell is the author of Tomorrowland, the 1964-65 World's Fair and the Transformation of America. Thanks so much.
Thanks for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.